This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Before we jump in with 2 feet, we like to say hello to everyone on the show, and we say hello to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rick. I'm doing well. Hope you guys are doing the same.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I watched a very uplifting movie last night. Made me feel good. The one with Tom Hanks about Mr. Rogers. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, it's A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Oh,
right?
That's the name. What a nice movie.
Yeah.
Very
it's
nice
the opposite
movie.
Of what's going on here in 2020.
Yes. It really made you feel good, though. And how are you, Rick?
I'm doing good, Dave. I'm doing good. Can't complain. It's Thursday.
Any runs to the supermarket? Any chipmunk?
No,
issues?
I went yesterday. No line. I'll be honest, and I hate to even admit this. The level of anxiety, which is crazy to me, that I feel in the produce section now is, I mean, whole different
it's
level.
The produce section more than the other section.
Well, because the other section's easy. Like, I need some chicken breast, boom, I get chicken breast. I just look at them. As long as I look at the date, you know, I need some whatever
it is. You're an organic guy?
I'm an organic, well, yeah. I mean, you know who I'm married to. Of course I'm an organic guy. But when I start going fruits and vegetables, Cassie wants nectarines, and she wants peaches, and she wants cherries, and she wants strawberries. I mean, she's going all these fruits, so now I got to make sure it's ripe. She wants avocados, so I got to squeeze the avocados. I'm spending 45 minutes in the produce section. It's too much time.
That's not the hardest part, Rick, making sure that the vegetables are ripe. That's not the hardest part. The hardest part is opening the bag to put the damn vegetables in.
Oh, try to
do that without licking your fingers.
Yeah. And are you wearing gloves? You must be wearing gloves when you're in the supermarket.
Yeah, gloves, mask, and glasses.
So Cassie brings up a good question. How do you open those bags with gloves on?
Well, see, I got legit gloves. There's a certain glove, I know the ones Chris is talking about, that are real slippery. I usually take those gloves and I use those to like bring in packages, but I won't open them. I got like these like real nice black, like legit, like real thick plastic gloves that actually got some tack to them. So what I'll do now is before I even attempt to go through the produce section, I start with getting as many bags as I think I'm going to need. And I'll grab the bag, open it, put them in my cart. And that way I'm not struggling when I get the fruits.
I would watch a half-hour reality show. Chris, tell me if you would as well. Rick goes to the supermarket. That's it. Just multiple cameras around him watching him spend 25 to 30 minutes in the supermarket.
What do you mean 25 to 30 minutes in the supermarket?
Well, they'd have to condense it. I'm not going to sit there and watch 2 hours of you in the supermarket.
Dave, I'm envisioning that reality show looking a lot like those Ernest films. You know, like Ernest goes to jail. Rick goes to Whole Foods. Like that's what I'm envisioning in my head right now when you say that.
It'd be riveting television.
Yeah, it's like it'd be like the Tom Amansky fielding video, but Rick at the grocery store.
That's good stuff.
This is how you find a ripe nectarine.
Yes.
This is how you find a ripe watermelon.
A how-to.
Or a cantaloupe.
Right?
A how-to.
If you're unsure about how to find a ripe nectarine, you look for this.
This is why you need to get organic strawberries.
Yes.
And then check the strawberries to make sure there's no mold on the strawberry
check
or the blueberry.
Date. Open the container of eggs, look through eggs, make sure they're not cracked, close container, put in cart, right?
This is how to protect your Achilles tendon in the dairy aisle where someone is in the middle of the aisle putting milk and yogurt on the shelves and people are trying to maneuver carts around him as you sit there and try to pick out unsweetened vanilla almond milk.
Doing good. Yeah, all right, nightmare. And on that note, let's turn our attention to the NFL guys. We keep saying NFL not going to be touched. They're just going to go business as usual, not an issue. Well, the first domino has fallen here. The Hall of Fame game, I think it was Cowboys and Steelers, August 6th, I believe was the date. That is now postponed. The induction ceremony, that's not going to happen now in Canton, Ohio. So the first domino has fallen in the NFL, Chris.
Well, yeah, Dave. I mean, Cam Hayward talked a little bit about this late last week. He said they were probably going to have to cancel it just because they don't have an agreement on the health and safety protocols. I know the owners are supposed to have a call today to try to work out the logistics on when teams will report to training camp. But, I mean, if you're playing in that Hall of Fame game, you're reporting a lot earlier than those other teams. And so the reality is that they're not going to be able to get all of those things worked out where the players would be able to come in and have enough time to lead up to playing in that game. I think you have to have something like 47 days of activity before you can actually play in your first preseason game. And, you know, right now where we're at in the calendar, you know, you're getting pretty close to that date where they would have to be in there, and they just don't have everything worked out. So is anybody going to complain? The Steelers and Cowboys players going to complain about not playing a fifth preseason game? Absolutely not. But this is the first hit to the NFL schedule because the NFL has pretty much gone business as usual throughout this calendar year, even in the midst of a pandemic. They had free agency. They had the draft. They really didn't have any events that fans would miss. The only thing that we really didn't have are the off-season strength and conditioning programs, the OTAs, the mini camps. But we've had seasons go on before where we didn't have those and nobody really missed anything. So this is the first scheduled event that I think the fans are going to miss because, you know, you get excited about the Hall of Fame game. Even if you know you're not going to see the starters on both teams play, it's something exciting knowing that the NFL is back and seeing the kickoff on that weekend when they're enshrining the greats.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're not surprised, right?
No, I mean, we're not surprised. This felt inevitable. But I think your level of concern has to raise with this.
No, I'm completely opposite. My level of concern hasn't changed.
Really?
I mean, well, they've already been talking about having less exhibition games this season as opposed to more.
I don't know if you're going to see any exhibition games this season.
I think you'll probably see a couple. I think there are some owners in the NFL that would rather wait than start the season as it's scheduled just to have more information, see how things play out with these different leagues coming back. But again, I mean, I think there's a majority of the owners that want to start on September 10th.
I'm sure that most of them do, but wanting to do something and having it be the right thing are two different conversations, no?
Well, yeah, I mean, where every league is at. I mean, there's no right answer to that. I mean, so far, so good. I mean, you're going to see positive tests because guys, I mean, the frequency of tests, but as long as you have, you know, athletes, you know, get through it in the 2 weeks and come back and be fine. I mean, there's no, you know, no one on ventilators and everything else, then you continue forward. I think all these sports continue forward unless you have an entire team get it or most of your team gets it. Or if in the NBA, I mean, you start talking about the LeBron Jameses, Kawhi Leonards, those, the Greek freak, you know, those guys get it in the middle of the playoffs and have to miss, you know, at least 2 weeks. I mean, that's a different issue.
Well, NBA at least is going to be, you know, in a bubble. So you'd hope that once
that's not really a bubble.
Well, I mean, it's closer bubble-esque to a bubble than the NFL is going to be in a bubble.
Well, of course it is. But I mean, Taylor Twellman was on with Golic and Wingo this morning. In the way he's hearing it from agents and other people he's been in contact with, because the MLS is going to be in Orlando too, he said the MLS is more of a bubble as opposed to the NBA, which he is hearing is more like a mesh hat. It doesn't scream bubble. Mesh hat does not scream bubble.
No. So the players are locked in. The coaches are locked in. The media, I think, is also going to be locked in, right?
Freedom of movement. What he was talking about was freedom of movement. Everything the MLS is doing is going to be scheduled. Like the players will adhere to a really strict schedule as opposed to the NBA. You're going to have more freedom of movement, like where you can go. You can go golfing. You can go fishing. Like there's going to be more movement. And on top of that, the scariest thing has to be the fact that, I mean, you're not having the employees quarantined with you in the bubble.
Right.
They're going to be in and out.
Right, which makes
which still makes
to
no
me,
sense.
Makes no sense to me. None.
Yeah, here's the thing though. If Disney's not going to do it, why not? If you're the NBA, say for the next 2 months, your employees, whoever they are, whoever you handpick, whoever wants to do this, will sign contracts with us, and we'll have to stay inside the bubble. If Disney can't do it legally or whatever it is,
right,
or liability, they don't want to do it, then have the NBA do it. You know, here's the however many employees. Here's the 200 employees that have signed up and said that they want to do this. They'll sign contracts with the NBA, so they have to stay inside the bubble. That would make sense to me.
It does make sense. And then at least you don't have, you're not bringing in any outside factor into the bubble.
Yeah, because you're going to still have people going in and out of the bubble that are cleaning rooms, serving food.
Right, so it almost defeats the whole point of the bubble.
It doesn't defeat it.
Well,
I mean,
it doesn't make you feel all that confident in it.
It chips away at it a little bit, yeah. I mean, it pokes some holes in the bubble.
Yeah, I think having staff being able to come and go in the bubble is not ideal. But then when you start thinking about trying to get them to consider staying in the bubble, you're talking about a lot of people. I mean, a lot of support staff. Think about how many people it's going to take to be able to house these guys, clean the rooms, make sure that they have food, all of the things that are going to be necessary, all of the services that are going to be essential while they're down there for a couple of months. You're talking about a huge commitment from the support staff if they weren't going to be able to go back home at the end of the day and stay with their families. Like, I just don't know that you're going to be able to get enough folks to be willing to commit to that.
Which but is doesn't have to be for the whole
NBA
time, though.
But doing it.
No, but it could be every 2 weeks. I mean, you could bring people in every 2 weeks.
Sure.
You're in for 2 weeks.
If you test them,
bring other people
a couple
in.
Days leading up to that also.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA's got enough money. Disney has enough money where I feel like they could make it work. And I think, I mean, with unemployment and everything else, I'm sure they could find enough people that would agree to do it. You'd have to work on the time frame, and maybe it's not the whole, you know, the whole time. Maybe it's every 2 weeks you bring in new people that you've tested.
But those are more people that you've got to train, more people that you've got to instruct on the protocols that have to be taking place. Like, that's a lot. And we're not talking about, you know, just a few people.
Yeah, but, what, but how different is
dozens of people?
Yeah, but I don't understand your point. You're still, those are the same people that are going to have come in and leave and come in and leave. I mean, it'd be no different except they're actually staying inside the bubble, so you don't have to worry about them, you know, whatever they decide to do once they leave.
Yeah, but you're talking about, you're saying that, okay, you have those folks stay for 2 weeks and then you get another group of folks. Well, that's a huge group of people that you're talking about bringing in. That's another group. All I'm saying is the NBA probably doesn't have that in place. Because it wasn't going to be feasible. You weren't going to get enough employees to be able to commit to it. So I think they're doing the best under the circumstances, but we all recognize that the plan that they have that they're moving forward with is not going to be a true bubble, even if they're presenting it to the players and to the fans as such.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right. I just have a hard time believing with the current state of this country that you couldn't find enough people that would agree to do that. That wouldn't say, okay, you know, I'll make the commitment for if it's a month or whatever it is, and then you bring new people in, that they wouldn't do it with the amount of employees down in Disney.
What you're saying absolutely makes sense. That's the best way to go about it. But, I mean, I think that's obvious. So if they're not doing it, there has to be a reason for it. I'm just throwing out something that could be plausible as an explanation as to why they're not having the employees that are going to be serving the players in this bubble in a quarantine situation as well. Because the NBA's got a lot at risk right now. They've got a ton at risk. And if these guys, if you have a rash of players get infected to the point where teams can't participate, then what does that do?
Well, it kills your sport. It might kill all the sports as well.
The integrity of your restart and your season.
Yeah, it ruins your sport and it puts other sports on notice. Now, let's take a listen to Malcolm Jenkins back to the NFL. He was on CNN this morning, and here's his thoughts on the potential restart of the NFL.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate. Where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff, we can't do that. And so we'll end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk, not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to the place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
So there you have the football players.
Yeah, but that's unrealistic. I mean, what he said is just
unrealistic. The trust system is never going to work. It will never work.
Well, not even the trust system. It's not. I mean, it's never going to be until there's a vaccine, which is only going to be you give me the percentage. It's not going to be 100% that you get the vaccine and you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
There's never going to be true, you know, 100% no risk.
You can't eliminate the risk.
You can't.
Yeah, so that part of it is a moot point. Like, I don't understand why he even threw that out there.
Chris, you know this. You've been in an NFL locker room. I mean, it may not be essential business for Malcolm Jenkins because he's made enough money, but there is a majority of NFL players that this is essential to them paying their bills.
Oh, no question about it. Like, a lot of guys in the NFL are living a thousandaire's lifestyle. They're not multimillionaires. They're going check to check, season to season, and they can't afford to miss out on an entire season. And so you have to realize that's what you have to balance, the interest of all of the players within the union, not just the guys at the very top, but you also got to consider the guys that are, you know, in their first, second, third years, you know, that haven't made the money as established veteran players. And I think that's maybe the part that Malcolm Jenkins isn't looking at. And, you know, that's what DeMaurice Smith and J.C. Tretter, the president of the NFLPA, have to consider when trying to figure out a way forward dealing with this virus. The coronavirus is not going away. We're all going to have to learn how to deal with this, and it doesn't seem like there is going to be a vaccine that's going to come into play in time to impact the NFL. So I guess the reality is what are the measures that the players and the owners can put in place to make the majority of the players feel safe? And then for the guys that won't feel safe, then you have to be able to try to work out some agreement where they can sit out, where they can opt out of the season. That's what it's going to have to be. That's what the NHL did. That's what the NBA is doing. That's what MLB is doing. The NFL is going to have that same provision, because you can't force guys that are uncomfortable playing football in a pandemic situation to go out there. You just can't do that.
So I think
Malcolm
luxury
Jenkins truly feels that way, then Malcolm Jenkins can sit home. But that doesn't mean that everybody with the New Orleans Saints isn't going to go out there and play.
No, you're exactly right. I think the luxury that the NFL has, it is, I mean, the NFL is king. So even if you had, I mean, you name the player, say it was, you know, Zeke during the season comes down and, you know, he's already had it and got through it. But, you know, one of these big time players, Saquon Barkley, comes down with it, misses 2 weeks. You're still going to watch Giants games.
Of course you would.
You know, outside, even if the quarterback goes down, I mean, because it's the NFL, you're still going to watch. You're not going to like it, but you're going to watch.
Goes down, unless the entire Giants offense or the Jets defense goes down, you're going to still want to watch that.
Yeah, I think at some point what the NFL is going to have to do is they can't have, I mean, there's just too many guys and too many staff members and everything else. You're not going to get a true bubble. But the, you know, the idea that we tossed around last week or the week before, where if you play on a Sunday, you give the guys Monday and Tuesday off, you test everyone on Tuesday, they pop, they're negative on a Wednesday, and then you bring them into a hotel environment. Like you create your own bubble.
For a couple of days.
Leading into the Wednesday into your next, that way you can, you know, it's not 100%, but you can have a better idea of, you know, guys being negative, having, you know, contact practices during the week and then into the game. Because Fauci said, it's 2 days where it would take to pop positive on a test.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you could be exposed and have it not test positive. Right.
So even if the guys, even if they played on a Sunday, went out and, you know, had dinner or were exposed at a bar or whatever, because again, the guys are going to do what they're going to do.
Of course, everyone's not going to do the right thing. Thought that 2,000 people are going to do the right thing is, I mean,
you just saw it. It happened with women's soccer. An entire team had to pull out of the tournament because they had six people go to a bar. They traced it back to a bar where they got it at a bar.
I mean, even individual sport, even Novak Djokovic is dancing with his shirt off. I mean, the trust factor, forget about it. I don't trust anybody. There's no way you can trust people here now. There's no chance.
No, because your idea of keeping yourself safe could be different than someone else's idea.
I know that it is. I know that the three of us have a different idea of keeping ourselves safe than probably most professional athletes.
It's just people in general. I mean, you hear Kay joke about it. He's dead serious. Like Kay, I mean, I guarantee Kay ordered goggles. Like Kay will wear goggles out. Because he's petrified of it.
Well, I don't blame him.
I don't either. Cassie ordered goggles for me. She said, "Do you want to wear the goggles?" I said, "No, I'm good with sunglasses. Just give me the glasses. I don't need to wear the goggles." But, I mean, everyone is different. Every state is different. Every person is different.
Well, look, we've done well here in New York.
Yeah, we have. We've done really well. But you see the states now that are struggling. Uh-huh. It wasn't because, you know, they're reopening. It's because the people, you know, look at this differently than we do.
That's right. And they go about their everyday lives. I mean, Chris, down in South Carolina, right? Florida, Texas, Arizona. These are states that laughed. Oh, New York is so bad. We're not that bad. Well, now you're way worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's people that don't want to listen to the science, Dave. I mean, when you insist on going out without wearing a mask to cover your nose and your mouth, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. But people
just
want to fight for that right. And so I think when it comes to the restart across sports and getting guys to do the right thing and trusting that teammates and colleagues will do the right thing, I think all of the players have to play a role in keeping each other accountable and reiterating to the players that don't want to do the right thing the fact that if we don't play these games, we don't get paid. And there are some guys that need those checks more than others. So you're going to have to rely on a little bit of peer pressure in order to try to get the majority of guys to do the right thing. And I think if you can pull that off, then you have a chance of being able to start and finish your season. We'll see. I mean, Major League Baseball will be the test case, but if Major League Baseball can't pull it off with the nature of the other sports, I have a hard time imagining they're actually going to be able to get through their schedule.
I think the sports will push through. And, you know, I heard someone say feasibility. It has nothing. It's the profitability. As long as it's profitable to keep playing, they're going to keep playing. Unless, God forbid, the worst thing happens.
Yeah, I guess unless you have so many guys get infected where you can't field your team.
Yeah, or you start talking about
which would seem nearly an impossibility. But, I mean, with this pandemic, I'm not going to rule anything out.
I think when all of a sudden you start talking about the integrity of the sport, you know, we keep talking about with baseball, the asterisks and all that. I think it's stupidity, but I mean, that starts to make, you could make an argument for that if during the course of an NBA playoffs, the best players start going down with COVID-19.
Oh, if LeBron, God forbid, gets COVID, or Anthony Davis, or Giannis, or Kawhi, then I think, or multiple guys on multiple teams, superstar players, then I believe that this is an asterisk kind of season.
I said that last week and you guys jumped down my throat. I said that exact same thing.
No, we agree with that.
Yes, I did.
You
I said
you look at this as an asterisk season regardless.
No, I said if the key guys end up getting, you know, COVID-19 and, you know, you're not talking about playing against a Clippers team that has somebody like Kawhi Leonard, or you're not talking about playing a Bucks team that has Giannis, then it absolutely is going to affect how people look at the NBA champion this year.
100%. I thought you had said that if it's a Kawhi goes down with a knee injury, then you'd look at it differently.
No, I mean, injuries are a part of the game, Dave. Injuries are a part of it. But when you start talking about a pandemic and the coronavirus, that's something separate and apart. That was my point that I was trying to make. Like, if it's a sports injury, if it's something orthopedic, then okay, we would get it. We understand that. That's the nature of it.
No,
that's
I
what
agree
happened
with
Kevin.
If that's what happened
with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson with the Golden State Warriors going up against the Toronto Raptors. That
if
actually
this is
happened.
COVID, yeah, all bets are off. Then, of
yeah,
course,
but with
right?
COVID, all bets are off. And if
I agree with that.
Yeah, if somebody gets sick, then that's going to be, yeah, I'm not going to look at that season or that champion the same way I would.
I don't think anybody will. I mean, God forbid LeBron gets sick in the Western Conference Finals and can't play again, and the Clippers go on to win it. Yes, I think this is a non-legitimate title. Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. Rick, you agree with that, right?
Yeah, at that point, you know, it maybe it's not the finals. Maybe it's leading into the finals. If all of a sudden you have
whatever,
you know,
if LeBron at any point becomes sick and they can't win because of that, it's a tainted championship for whoever gets it.
Well, it's tainted, but they'll keep playing. The point I was trying to make is if all of a sudden a couple guys on that team, like midway through, you know, the Western Conference Finals, you know, three or four of the Lakers go down and you're fielding a team that's not, I mean, it's not even a team. I mean, if one guy goes down, that's brutal. And you're probably not going to win if LeBron gets sick. But if all of a sudden it's LeBron, AD, and, you know, two other players, I mean, is that really even a series at that point?
No.
No. Not at all.
No, it's not.
You know what I'm saying?
Not,
like, that is
not legitimate.
Not even legitimate. Like, I mean, who? I mean, the NBA is looking at it like, really? I mean, this is what we're doing now? Like, is this worth it? We're just going to roll out this team? For what?
It's worth nothing.
No, I guess you would just say
you're doing
it. Because
at that point, it's not... It's not representative of it's not representative of the product that you're trying to, you know, give to the public. It's just it's guys at that point.
Yeah, it is guys, but I guess the owners would look at it as we're satisfying the television partners and our contracts, and, you know, we'll just call it a win from that perspective, even though we know that the championship is not going to be looked at the same way.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you just put on games.
Yeah, right. That's it.
Right.
But under the current circumstances, Rick, I don't know if that's necessary.
And you'd have
the worst
to, though,
thing.
Wouldn't you? I mean, you can't,
I would
you can't
still
just
watch
stop it.
It.
No, once you start, you can't stop.
Right.
Yeah, you're not pulling out of this. This is all in.
All in. All in. You want to hear from Ezekiel Elliott? He spoke on Twitch TV yesterday. You want to hear from Zeke?
I would love to hear from Zeke.
I
don't know if you would. I know Santiago would.
No, I'm fine. I'm not opposed to
NFC East troll he is.
Well, Santiago loves Zeke.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Here's Ezekiel Elliott yesterday on Twitch TV. He's hoping we have a season, but he says it has to be the right circumstances.
I want to let you guys know, I do hope that we have a season. But, I mean, it just has to be right. We got to put the health of the players and the coaches and the support staff first. I mean, I think that's important.
Of course it's important. It's the most important thing. I just don't know how you can realistically keep these guys, other than that most of them are in really, really good physical condition. I don't know how you can ultimately keep them all that safe.
Yeah, but that's not, what you just said is not the definition of keeping anyone safe. The definition of keeping everyone safe is not to have a season.
Yes.
Right. The definition of safe is what we're doing right now.
Right.
Which is quarantine, like keeping ourselves socially distanced and everything else. Like avoiding things that we don't necessarily need to do. I have to go to the grocery store, so I go to the grocery store. Otherwise, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, but you
don't have to play an NFL season.
Right. I mean, you're not going around hundreds of people and sweating all over them and coming in physical contact with them.
You just watched Novak Djokovic have a dance party with his buddies. I mean, they were in close proximity, but they're not, I mean, running around, you know, DDTing and tackling each other. And they all got sick. So what's going to happen? I mean, that right there is the perfect, that right there is the perfect example of how the NFL has no chance to not have guys get sick.
Yeah, guys, how do you avoid it? Yeah, you can't avoid it. I mean, you just can't. You're going to have positive tests across all of the sports, even baseball. I mean, we're seeing it with the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, Brooks Koepka's pulling out of the Travelers this weekend. I mean, because of his caddy testing positive. So if it's happening in golf, it absolutely is going to happen in the other sports, and especially the sports that have more contact like basketball and like football. So, I mean, yeah, it's inevitable that it's going to happen, and with the nature of the sport, they're going to have a hard time being able to keep players, you know, from being able to contract this virus. So I just, yeah, to say that you're going to eliminate the risk for players in the NFL, it's not going to happen. It's just a matter of what is an acceptable rate of infection for NFL players and for these teams. I think that's something that has to be determined. What also has to be determined is how frequently you're going to test these guys.
Yep. And I think the level of infection too, right? Like if guys are getting really sick, if you're asymptomatic and you have it and you're out, you're quarantined and you're back.
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
I think what you just said is the key. I don't know if it's a number. And again, I mean, sure, if it sweeps through a team, there will be a number where you just can't feel the team.
That has to be a number, yeah.
I mean, there has to be a number. It's probably a bigger number than we even realize with how they're going to have, you know, maybe even a separate team or teams available that you can, you know, take players from and whatever else they're going to have available. It's going to be the how sick a guy gets. If you're just going to have, I mean, if the best thing right now for these owners is that guys get it, asymptomatic, couple days you don't feel good, boom, yep. You bounce back.
You
next guy gets
antibodies.
It, couple days, yep. Mm-hmm. And you bounce back.
But in
until
the
you get that one guy that doesn't, and then that all of a sudden, because now it's not just the public perception, it's the perception in the locker room. Because if you keep getting guys go through it, no big deal, okay, you know, you know this Chris is an athlete. Like you start getting, okay, if he got through it, I'll get through it. And you feel more comfortable, and then all of a sudden it's going to take that one guy gets it, and he ends up on a ventilator, and then you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, but it only takes one guy in sports, not just football. It only takes one guy across all of the major sports. If he gets really, really sick, or God forbid something tragic happens, then all of the plans that all of these leagues have been making get thrown out of the window. But I guess when I'm looking at the NFL, just because of the nature of the sport, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that one guy that's positive with COVID-19 can affect dozens of players in one practice.
Right.
And so if you test those guys and you find out that they're positive and you have to isolate them and then you have more positive tests in the subsequent days, at some point you start running out of bodies. At some point you got to be able to field a team to go on the field on Sunday and play. So This is one of those things I'm really interested to see. I hope that the NFL can pull it off, but I mean, I have my reasons for doubt that this is actually going to be able to happen and that we're actually going to finish the season.
I think if you're the NFL and you want to have this season, knowing that there are going to be guys that get sick and maybe it goes through a team and there's, you know, 10, 12, 15 guys that get it, you're going to have to find a way to, because there are enough guys that can play. I mean, maybe not at the NFL level, but you saw with the XFL, you can field teams. Maybe the solution is you have guys that aren't currently in the NFL, undrafted guys that sign up to be a part of a bubble where they practice, mm-hmm. but are going to be inside the bubble, so you know that they're going to be healthy if you need
almost
them.
Like replacement players just ready to go.
Yeah, like replacement teams that are going to have to be in a bubble, you know what I mean, in a bubble situation.
Yeah, so that they can't get sick, so God forbid your starters or your 53 or whatever it's going to be this year get sick, that those guys can just, you know, swoop in and take over.
Yeah, because Chris is right. I mean, there could be a situation with how this thing, and do we have any definitive answers as to, you know, can asymptomatic people spread this thing?
I think so.
It feels like you can.
If you're asymptomatic, you can spread it, yes.
Absolutely, you can.
Okay, so if you're asymptomatic, you have it in your nose floating around for 2 days, and somehow, you know, the last test you took before the Sunday game, you're negative, but you have it.
Right. And then and you test positive on Tuesday?
Well, yeah, you test positive on that Monday or the Tuesday. Right. And then
and
you,
now you just played in the game against another team, and you're an offensive lineman?
Yeah, or you're a running back. I mean, how you just touched the ball 30 times. Right. How are you tracing that?
And every player on the other team has been all over you for an entire game?
Yeah, and the reality is that it doesn't matter if you feel good and you don't have symptoms. You still have to be quarantined. You're going to miss 2 weeks. It's not you can't. There's no, oh, hey, I feel good. Right, I'm going to play through this.
No.
But I guess, though, throughout the course of a typical NFL week, a team would have a chance to replace a guy with somebody off the street. I mean, you would just have to make sure that you test that player that Monday, and then you have to make sure that they quarantine and then test them again when they get to your facility on Thursday. And if they're still negative, then they could be cleared to practice on Friday and play in the game on Sunday. I guess you could do it that way.
I would almost want to have like an East Coast replacement team and a West Coast replacement team and have them in like this whole, this bubble situation where they're getting actual coaching and practicing. And then, cause you're going to need guys.
Wait, you'd have two, like each team would have two teams on the side?
No, not each team. I would have one, I would have a full team on the East Coast and a full team on the West Coast. And those West Coast teams can choose from, cause of the proximity, you could choose from the West Coast guys. And then the East Coast teams have that feeder system for it. Not each team.
So almost like a minor league system then.
Yeah, but not for each team.
Right. So like a full minor league that you can now pick and choose as you need.
As you need, yeah.
Like an a la carte kind of thing.
Yeah, I just lost my safety. This guy, man, he's available. You know what I mean? He's practicing with the replacement team.
Well, these teams are going to carry a lot more guys this year, though. I mean, they're already talking about the practice squad guys being available throughout the course of the season and then actually adding on to that number. I mean, you could be talking about teams carrying 65, 70 guys this year.
Which, again, is almost counter.
As opposed to being able to have 53 on active roster playing. So, I mean, that could be another adjustment that gives them a little more cushion in terms of having the number of bodies that they need to get through an entire season with all of this stuff going on.
Yeah, but which is almost counterintuitive to trying to keep as little amount of people as necessary around. Like, now you're carrying extra guys that you have to worry about getting the rest of your team sick.
I mean, it's a balancing act.
It'll make your head spin.
There's no perfect way.
There's no perfect answer to the problem.
Every way that you're like, ooh, that's got an idea, has the detractors as well. Every single way.
Yeah, I don't even know how you do it. I mean, I don't think there's enough NFL players that would sign up to be a part of a bubble anyway, if you thought that was part of the solution.
You don't think there would be?
If that was the only way they can get paid?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think they would. If they're going to get paid? Guys.
Yeah, you'd have enough guys.
For your shot in the NFL? Look, you have guys that play in the XFL.
Yeah, you have enough guys.
I'm saying that are in the NFL already, not guys that would... that would want to participate on, you know, the farm system team. I'm saying the NFL in general.
I think you would have enough guys that would be willing to do it. Just because of the financial motivation, man. I mean, the NFL players don't get paid what the guys in other sports get paid.
Yeah, it feels like there's got to be some kind of compromise. Well, maybe it's not the entire time, but it's a certain amount of, you know, days during the week leading into the game.
Yeah, I think they said it's something like 150 days for the entire season, thereabouts, from September 10th through December. So, I mean, you know, could you get guys to commit to being in a bubble for that long and staying in a hotel for that long?
No way.
That would be hard, but I mean.
How you going to play the games, though?
You said what?
You're going to play the games in the bubble? Like, you have a couple of stadiums in this bubble?
No. I mean, you would travel. You would travel, obviously.
Right,
so
then you're still
going
to have to do your normal travel to wherever the game is going to be held.
Yeah, you travel to it, but I mean, the flights are chartered, so it's not going to be anybody else but team personnel on the planes.
I mean, could you lock a team away? I mean, training camp is essentially locking a team away, right? When the Giants practiced in Albany.
I mean, we used to be in training camp when I was with the Cowboys for over 2 months.
Right. So you could do it.
Yeah, but you still have freedom of movement, though. I mean, let's not forget, there still is freedom of movement. I mean, the big thing is you can say the bubble situation, but you're not going to have guys just stay in a hotel. The NBA guys agreed to go to Disney because they're going to be
other things to do, yes.
Yeah, there's freedom of movement. Guys will have other things to do. So you can have a guy locked away from his family for 150 days and he can only go from the facility to the hotel. No one's going to sign up.
It's not going to end well.
if it was a zero-sum game, if it was like, okay, you're either going to have to do it in a bubble environment or we're not going to have the season at all, then, yeah, I think players would commit to doing it. But because there is that alternative, because they're not going to actually create a real bubble with the NFL, then, yeah, players are going to opt for having as much freedom as possible. But if you took away the option of them having that freedom in the interest of protecting the welfare of everybody involved, I think you would have enough NFL players commit to doing that in order to have a season.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get into the Knicks and Leon Rose. Alan Hahn from Barton Hahn, that very same Alan Hahn, will join us at 11 o'clock this morning to help us make sense and maybe a little positivity on the Knicks. Of course, we've got Andy from Merrick. Well, maybe. No? If anyone could be positive about the Knicks, it would be Alan Hahn. No,
I'm laughing. Dean Hahn's such a bad guy. He's so funny.
What he said?
He sends me a text message because I said there should be a West Coast and an East Coast. He goes, who's going to coach them, Biggie and Tupac?
That's well done, by him. Now, today on ESPN Daily, as college football players report to training camps, more are testing positive for coronavirus. How are schools and players handling the risk? Will we see college games at all in 2020? That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So the Knicks with the official announcement and the introductory press conference. And let's take a listen to Leon Rose yesterday. And here he is on MSG Network. He wants to create a culture that players from all over the league want to come to.
What we have to create is an environment where players are going to want to come here. And the way to do that is on the day-to-day with the players that we have, with the organization we have, and making sure that every aspect of that is going to be player-friendly. It's going to be first class. We're going to work as hard as we can to show people that this is a place that you want to be at. I mean, we have the greatest city in the world. We have an iconic arena, and we just need to create a culture that people are going to want to be part of.
I'm sorry if I'm negative. I'm not trying to be. It sounds good. Now you got to prove it to me, because I've heard this from Rick, from, you know, every one of the last 50 guys that have had this job.
Yeah, but I mean, culture is winning. I mean, what they have to create, you can say, I mean, all he wants about culture. I mean, they have to win more. You know, in order to get the players that he's talking about, I mean, why they love the Garden and not playing for the Knicks when they show up at the Garden is because they can come, drop 50, and leave. They don't have to deal with, you know, the fan base and the media when they're doing a lot of losing. Because as good as it is to win in New York, it sucks to lose in New York. And I mean, you start looking at what the Knicks have done, they don't do a lot of winning.
We've done any winning.
So you got to build the foundation. You have to have the team, I mean, similar to what the Nets did. Yeah, I mean, you draft well, you develop players, you build a solid foundation that's on the cusp, on the verge. So if there is a disgruntled star somewhere else, they look at your team and say, hey, you know, I could be the missing piece to take this team to that next level and then be the hero.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Rick. You got to demonstrate some level of competency before an NBA superstar is going to trust his career with your franchise. You know what I'm saying? It's like, why would I come to Madison Square Garden and agree to be a part of the Knicks when all you've shown is that you continue to be dysfunctional year in and year out, no matter who the players are, no matter who the team president is, no matter who the coach is, you are a perennial loser. And so at some point, the Knicks are going to have to be able to break out of that, and we'll see what direction Leon Rose wants to go in with his head coach. It sounded an awful like he was describing Tom Thibodeau when he talked about the qualities that he was looking for, especially when it comes to leadership and holding players accountable. We'll see if that's the direction that he wants to go in, but that would be a hire that makes a whole lot of sense, given that he wants somebody that's going to be collaborative with the front office, somebody that can have good working relationships with all involved. We know that Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau go back. Also, Tom Thibodeau and World Wide West go back to his days in Chicago. So, I mean, it's just, when you start connecting the dots, it feels an awful lot like the Knicks are looking at Tom Thibodeau being their next head coach, but they're throwing a lot of other names out there just to make sure it looks like they're doing their due diligence to the media and to the fan base.
All right, you teased it. Let's take a listen. Here's Leon Rose. What are you looking for in your next head coach?
We want to find the right leader that can develop our young players as well as hold everyone accountable and take us from development to becoming a perennial winner. We also want somebody that we think that will be collaborative with the front office and, you know, someone that when you're in that huddle and you're looking in that coach's eyes, every player that's looking at him knows that that person is driving the ship and going to get the job done.
Yeah, I think what's most people right now think it's going to be Tom Thibodeau.
Okay, but what he just said is all well and good. But anyone that's played on a team, Chris has played on a Super Bowl team. Yeah, the coach holds players. The coach is responsible for holding players accountable. That's good. I mean, on good teams, coaches hold the players accountable. On great teams, players hold each other accountable. And the Knicks have to develop that kind of player. You need to hope that R.J. Barrett turns into that kind of player. That's what they need in that locker room.
Of course.
And for the same reasons,
19-year-old kid.
Yeah, but and for the same reasons why stars don't want to come to the New York Knicks is the same reason why Jamal Adams wants out of the New York Jets. Is because he doesn't trust what they're doing, and they do a lot of losing. And he doesn't want to waste his career on a dysfunctional franchise. That's how people look at the Knicks.
Yeah, the Knicks don't get the benefit of the doubt. Like when they go into those meetings to pitch players on why they should come here, or they're trying to work the back channels to see if players would be open to being traded to the Knicks. Like players aren't giving the Knicks any leeway, any benefit of the doubt, just because their past record indicates what they are. They are an organization that has been dysfunctional and they can't find their own way. And so until the franchise can get on solid footing, you aren't going to find a lot of guys that are going to sign up to want to play here as a free agent, which is why it's going to be important that the Knicks put together a really good front office staff, which it seems like they've done, find a really strong head coach to be able to develop the draft picks that you do have, the draft capital that you do have, in order to get those guys to realize their potential. And then once you see that and you see some fruit from that, i.e. winning basketball games, then I think you're going to be able to, you know, create some interest from players elsewhere in terms of being able to sign up to play at Madison Square Garden.
You're 100% right. You got to draft well. I mean, you have Mitchell Robinson. You moderately like him. You have R.J. Barrett. I think most Knicks fans are pretty keen on him, and that's about it, right? I mean, you have some draft collateral. You have to draft well. If you hit a home run or you do well on a couple of picks in this draft and all of a sudden you have a little bit of legitimacy and R.J. Barrett takes that next step, then yes, now you're heading in the right direction. But there's a ton of work to do, Rick, a ton with this team.
Yeah, it's not going to happen overnight. No one should be foolish enough to believe that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, over the next couple of years, this whole thing's going to turn around. It's going to take time. It's going to take the right head coach. I would probably lean more Kenny Atkinson than I would Tom Thibodeau, and I love Tom. I love Tibbs. But, I mean, when you see what Kenny was able to do with the Nets and what he did for, I mean, what he did for D'Angelo Russell. And, you know, we want to sit here talking about superstars. Just get us, can I have a point guard? Could we develop a point guard at some point?
Well, they don't have anybody that's a point
guard. I mean, that's what we need desperately is a legitimate point guard. But no, I mean, you have to find a way to make the Knicks attractive. And the only way you do that is by showing the rest of the league that you know what you're doing and that
you're
confident. Can win. Yeah, and then you
can
win.
You're a competent organization. Because let's be honest, Chris, it's been a long time since you could look at the Knicks from the outside and say, you know what, that's a competent organization. They get it. They're well run. I'm interested in going there.
Yeah, that's been a long time since you've been able to say that, Dave. And when we saw how quickly the Knicks moved when firing Steve Mills and deciding to hire Leon Rose, a lot of us were scratching our heads because they went out and they hired somebody that was the head of CAA basketball rather than hiring somebody that had worked in an NBA front office, and you were wondering, okay, how is this person going to create the structure that it's going to take in order to realize the potential of all of the people in the building, not just the players, but the coaching staff and the other executives that are working for the team. So it's just one of those things that made me think, okay, how do you do that with Leon Rose? And I think the Knicks are well on their way in terms of putting the pieces around Leon Rose in order to support him and help his vision come to fruition. I like the fact that they went out and got competent execs from other organizations, like getting Walt Perrin from the Utah Jazz and getting Frank Zanin from the Oklahoma City Thunder and hiring Brock Aller from the Cleveland Cavaliers as a cap guy. Like, those are solid moves. They're not anything that's going to grab any headlines, but those are the people that it's going to take in order to support somebody that's never worked in an NBA front office. And this person is going to be your team president. So I just think, you know, the addition of Worldwide West on the staff, getting somebody that has relationship capital with players and coaches around the NBA, that can only help. But, I mean, a big part of this turnaround is going to be who they decide to hire as their head coach. And they got to make sure that they get this hire absolutely right.
I mean, there have been plenty. Listen, Dave, I mean, it's been a long time, and I understand the frustration. But, I mean, there have been plenty of teams in all of sports that have bad ownership, that have been dysfunctional. But when you have, you know, when you hire the right GM and then you hire the right coach and you show some patience and you have confidence in who you hired, I mean, things can turn around.
I know that can't turn around. I'm not saying it's an impossibility. I'm just saying it's as a Knicks fan who's been through the ringer for so long, it's hard to have a ton of optimism right now.
Yeah, because there hasn't been a lot of patience. I mean, there hasn't appeared to be a real direction. I mean, it keeps changing. The direction keeps changing. I mean, there really has been no plan that they've stuck to.
Will they now?
Well, you hope so.
I hope so.
When you look at the teams that have success, I mean, there's been stability. There's been continuity. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers were a joke. And then all of a sudden they bring in John Lynch and, mm-hmm. and Kyle Shanahan, give them 6-year deals. And they've turned it around.
John Lynch had no experience, right, when they hired him?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to – I mean, if you hire the right people and give them the time to do what they – I mean, what you're paying them to do.
Hire them and get out of the way.
Yeah, get out of the way. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be some bad seasons mixed in. But if you're confident in who you hired and you trust what they're doing – when you come out of the end, on the other end of it, you should be in good shape.
I agree.
Theoretically.
I think, you're right. Everything you said is right. I completely buy into it. It's just, as a Knicks fan, I believe it's hard sometimes.
I understand that. And it's hard for the fans and it's hard for NBA players, the guys that, you know, could make the biggest difference to buy in either. Because there needs to be some level of success. One guy by himself isn't going to say, "Hey, you know, I'm jumping to this awful situation and make it better." They didn't do them any step, I mean, they didn't do themselves any favor with how they handled the whole Carmelo thing either.
No.
I mean, by the end of it, Carmelo Anthony, I mean, he had his supporters, but he was a pariah here in New York because he didn't win enough.
They didn't do themselves any favors in how they handled KP either.
You could just stop with they haven't done themselves any favors, period.
Yeah.
With everything.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about decisions in recent memory. I mean,
sure.
People around the NBA are shaking their heads like, you traded away a guy that has perennial all-star potential for cap space.
Yeah.
And
that was last year.
You didn't do anything with the cap space. You didn't use it. Or at least you didn't use it in the way that people thought you should use it. You ended up signing guys like Bobby Portis and Julius Randle and Reggie Bullock and Tobbs Gibson. That's what you traded.
That's what they did. That's exactly what they did. First we go to Rick's favorite, Andy, in Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Yes, in honor of yesterday's Hockey Hall of Fame inductions, or at least nominations, we're going with a three-pack of hockey questions and a very interesting bonus.
Well, Chris has never been more excited.
I love bonus.
I got those hockey lifelines warmed up. What you got for me, Andy?
No, Chris, you got this one. Ready? You're going to like
ready.
The question. There have been four black or brown hockey players enshrined into the NHL Hall of Fame. Two are contributors. Two have been enshrined because of their on-ice contributions. Jerome Iginla yesterday is one of them. Please name the other.
Is it Willie O'Ree?
No.
Well, he's one of the contributors.
Is it the goaltender?
Don't help him, Dave. He's got
this. Come on, stop. I'm not giving him the answer.
Yes. This other enshrinee was a goaltender.
Was a goaltender.
Full when you're right ready goalie. For help, Chris, we're here for you.
Full right. Caught with his right hand. Played on some of the greatest teams of all time. Team so good that he went and shot 9 holes before playoff games.
Did not play in this country.
That's really narrowing it down for me.
North of the border. Maybe played with Gretzky. Maybe Messier.
Maybe played with Gretzky. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe one time. Went down on a jawbreaker and thought he broke his knee, but it was a jawbreaker.
Okay, I am going to go with Grant Fuhrer.
The yes. great Grant Fuhrer.
Yes.
Bang, there you go.
Why don't you ask me that question, Andy? Come on. Do me a favor.
I got a goalie question for you.
Oh, here we go.
There have been 49 goalies in New Jersey Devil history. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Martin Brodeur leads the way with 688 wins. Who ranks number two with 118 wins?
Ooh. With 118 wins?
Mm-hmm.
Goalie.
American?
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Recent?
His career was 80s, right up to around 2000 when you started.
Did he play with me?
He was on the Islander team 2000 to 01.
That's one Christopher Terreri.
That would be correct.
T-Bone.
Play with me.
T-Bone. I play with T-Bone.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, once you got that, I would think you'd hammer it home.
Well, I knew it was T-Bone the entire time, but I just wanted to play with
him. So you were playing Andy.
I was playing Andy.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Just like Corey Schneider, 115 wins.
That was the other one. Yeah, that was the other one.
All right, David. Give you a Rangers question, as much as it hurts me.
All right.
There have been 86 goalies in New York Rangers history. Which of those goalies is the leader in penalty minutes among Ranger goalies?
Penalty minutes?
I like my goalies feisty.
All right.
Dave, this goalie may have beaten an Islander goalie into submission where he actually had to call for the trainer.
So you know the answer to this.
Yeah. Highly regarded as one of the toughest goalies of all time.
Who is one of the toughest goalies?
He is.
This guy, one of the toughest goalies. Within the last 20 years?
He actually challenged the bench after he got done beating up the other goalie.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think I know it. Was he a big time goalie? Was he really good?
He was good. I mean, he had a decent career. He wasn't all time.
You're going to need to give me more. I'm not.
His initials are involved in the name of the show. The first two initials are the initials of our show.
His initials is DC?
Yeah.
No, I don't think you got this.
No, it's on him?
No.
Great.
Come on. Really? I thought it was Dan Cucci, no?
Dan Beesbrook.
Yes, Beezer has the most penalty minutes?
Why did you give the answer?
Yeah, why would you say he's feisty? Van Beesbrook's not feisty.
Why would you give the answer?
John Van Beesbrook.
I know who the Beezer is, but why would you just spout that out?
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm a little premature answering there. All right, we'll make it up to you in the bonus question.
Yeah, but time out. Don't bury the lead. Van Beesbrook was, I mean, he was not feisty at all.
I never thought of the Beezer as a feisty goalie.
No, he was more feisty
afterwards. Penalty minutes than any other Ranger.
For tripping?
212. You can look it up.
He's feisty in the locker room, breaking Kid Rock CDs, but I don't remember him being feisty on the ice.
All right, Rick, you got to sit this one out because this question is about you.
No, this is not fair.
This is a bonus
Andy, I got to be honest. This is the worst you've been.
Okay, I didn't come to play today. Well, let's see. Let's see if you can.
Welcome
get
to
this
my
bonus
world, David.
Question.
Welcome to the dark side.
For Chris and Dave only, one Richard W. DiPietro Jr. played 1 year at Boston University. Mm-hmm. MVP of the Beanpot. Can you tell me what jersey number he wore at BU?
Rick, you know this, right?
Cloudy. Cloudy at best. Cloudy at best.
So it's not going to be 39 then.
No,
it is not 39.
Mm-hmm. Is it John Van Beesbrook?
It is not.
Oh my God.
Feisty, really feisty.
I hate to say this. I don't. Chris, you have any idea?
I'm thinking, Dave. I'm trying to come up with something.
Andy, give us a hint.
I would say Rex Specs and a Jerry Curl, much like Rick wore at BU.
Never had a Jerry Curl. I did have. No. I got a bowl cut. It wasn't a Jerry Curl. It was brutal.
Referring, of course, to Eric Dickerson.
All right. So number 29.
And 29 would be correct. Yes, Rick?
My man, 29.
There you go, Dave. Yeah.
Well, I only got it because he said what number Eric Dickerson wear.
Beezer, Dave, but as always, guys, stay healthy.
All right, be better tomorrow, Andy.
Know your teammate, by the way. How do you not know what number I wore in college? Well, man, we've been doing a show together for 3 years. You can't Google me once?
We did not know. I'm sorry.
Didn't know.
I know the name of your kids.
That's not right. I mean, that's bad. That's bad form by you.
I don't agree.
It is bad form.
I don't agree.
I mean, it's not like I wore 15 different numbers. I think I've actually told the story why I wore 39.
Or 29. 29. In this case.
No, but I told you why I wore 39 in the NHL, which you knew, is because Kenny Johnson had 29. So I couldn't wear 29.
All right, I think he's outed us, Chris. I think we're just awful teammates.
Yeah, we're bad teammates.
Yeah, that's obvious at this moment.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.